If you can't fix what's broken, you'll go insane.
Hiroshima.
Well, hello, Jellyheads, and welcome to another exciting episode of No U-Turns at the Drive-In. He is your host, looking out for Lucas Wilson.
And, terribly dubbed, David Halstead.
Nice. And this is a show where we explore the strange, the obscure, the be the color, just plain bad movie that's ever crossed the camera lens. And tonight, we are discussing Wheels on Meals.
Do we have to?
Yeah, a little bit, I guess. Explain the title?
Wheels on Meals? Well, I guess there's one of two options that happened here. A, it's a play on Meals on Wheels. Or B, they wanted to call it Meals on Wheels, but they would run into trademark infringement with the non-for-profit, I think they're non-for-profit, organization that provides meals to old people stuck in their homes.
I believe that's the reason. I can't think of, I don't care to look up any information on this film. It's not worth my time. I don't care who directed it. I don't care who wrote it. And the only star that I'm even going to bother mentioning is Jackie Chan.
Jackie Chan. This is why we watched it. It was a recommendation, if you remember from the last episode, from a Mr. Matthew Buckley.
Have you gotten back to him about this yet?
No, he hasn't gotten back to me. All he's done is he's liked the Twitter comment I made about him.
This had better be a prank. I could respect it if this is a prank. He's just went, oh, I bet I could get these guys to watch this terrible movie. And he recommended this.
He pranked me before.
If it's a prank, good on you, Matt.
And
good on you.
He and I pranked Pat once.
How so?
Well, I think it's safe that Pat probably doesn't listen to the show. And if everybody else can keep this secret, but one time, Matt and I mailed Pat a spork from Taco Bell in an unmarked envelope. Oh, wait, no. I'm wrong. It's the other way around. Pat and I mailed Matt a spork in the mail from Taco Bell.
I don't even care how you got that wrong. The movie is called Wheels on Meals. Let's just go with it.
And what is it about, Dave?
I don't know. Because quite frankly, listeners, I did not finish watching this movie.
No, yeah, we both tapped out at like the 10 minutes left point.
Oh, I think there was like 20 minutes.
Okay,
at least.
I guess
20, 25. I couldn't stand it. This was a very strange thing. It's like, at first it started and I was like, well, this looks really stupid. And the dubbing, just Jackie Chan dubbed by an Englishman or something?
I don't know. You can't. It's like if
the dubbing was the worst.
It's like,
Or as I said to you, is the dubbing the worst, or is it just that this is a dubbed comedy and the dubbing is ruining all the jokes?
That's a good question. I mean, like, there were some jokes in it that I don't think would have been funny no matter what.
Right.
But there were some jokes that happened where, like, I think I would have laughed at that had that been a subtitle and not this one guy playing every character.
It did sound like half the people in this film were dubbed by the same person.
Which
happens.
Historically, in older films is the case. Mm-hmm. Not so much these days.
They try to avoid that these days, or at least do it so it's not obvious.
At least in the countries that have like a bigger market, like Germany or something like that. But this was the hardest I've ever tried to get through a dub. I mean, other times it's like a serious movie and it's happening. It just makes the movie funny and then I'm kind of enjoying myself. But this was a movie that was supposed to be making me laugh. I know it was a comedy and it's supposed to be making me laugh. But it's not, because it just, every joke is flat because the line delivery is off and it's not matching the lips and it's a weird sense. And then Jackie Chan speaking not like Jackie Chan.
Yeah, that really, like, you mentioned that right away. Hearing another voice come out of Jackie Chan, a childhood icon of mine, and possibly yours too, I don't know.
I didn't see as many movies as his, but I watched his cartoon. Although I don't think it's voiced by him, but it's still like, he shows up in like the beginning and end of it. But like, no, yeah, I'm familiar with Jackie Chan's voice, and I've seen many scenes of him. Because like, his movies are always running on like FX and ABC and NBC and TNT and all that jazz.
Okay, so we thought, hey, Jackie Chan movie, old Jackie Chan movie, this, how can we lose?
But how could we,
to be fair, Jackie Chan has been in a lot of bad movies. But he usually does fun stuff in those bad movies that makes them watchable.
Some cool stunts and stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's what we thought would have happened, that eventually we'd get past this bad slapstick and at least enjoy some young, youthful 1980s Jackie Chan kicking people's butts. But that never happened.
We were waiting for it, and there would be like a second of action, but it's like it stopped as soon as it started.
And then everybody's running, and Jackie Chan and his friend, Mr. Glasses, and their third friend, Pickpocket, running around Barcelona.
Yeah, okay, so you got four main characters, right? Jackie Chan, his buddy, who he rooms with, in Spain.
I think it's his brother.
Right? I think it's his brother?
Yeah.
I don't think so, because they went to see that guy's father in the mental institution.
Oh, are they cousins?
Institution.
Cousin, because he said uncle. Jackie Chan, I think, said uncle, while the other guy said father, right?
Either that or you're still thinking of the cartoon.
The cartoon where Jackie Chan is going, uncle! Uncle!
And then you had, I don't know, it was another Chinese guy who somehow got put in charge of a detective agency.
This is what I remember. There was a detective agency in Barcelona, but I guess they're not that great because they weren't paying their bills and they didn't have any more power. And I guess the guy who owned the detective agency maybe owed money to people or something, so he's like, all right, well, I'm going to skip town. You're the new acting CEO of our company. Yay! And he ditches and leaves this guy in charge of the private eye business. And then he tries to solve, he gets a request from this Englishman to find this woman who turns out to be that lady that's stealing people's money and cars and stuff.
I don't think it was that lady. I think they were after that lady's mother.
In the insane asylum?
No, she was dating the Chinese guy's father in the insane asylum.
She worked there?
It doesn't say how they met.
But I remember he was like going to ask her out or something. But then didn't she do something crazy too?
I have not devoted enough brain cells to this. It's not worth it to me. I don't know what the detective case was, but it somehow got caught up and kept chasing this girl around. And so Jackie Chan and his cousin were all like, oh, we're going to protect the girl because Jackie Chan's cousin kind of likes her, even though she steals from them constantly.
Yeah, but then at some point it's like, we know you stole from us, but we're not going to be angry. We want to give you more money. Why don't you turn over a leaf and join our team? And she's like, okay. And then she doesn't steal again, and then she's just a member of their crew of mobile food vendors.
There is just no point to anything that happens in this movie.
Yeah, like, Seth, this whole thing, she's like stealing money, pickpocketing and stuff, and then all of a sudden, oh, they offer her a job working for him, and then they're like, all right, okay.
To put it simply, I followed the plot of The Room better than I followed the plot of this movie. It was convoluted for God knows what reason. It had to be that convoluted. And just made no sense. People doing things that you're like sitting there going, why on earth would anyone do that? This makes no sense.
And then halfway through the movie, we're introduced to the movie's villain.
No, an hour into the movie, I think he's going to end up being the ending villain. You said there's a sword fight later on.
It's him, yes. There's a sword fight, and he and Jackie Chan are sword fighting.
Okay, I remember we were talking about martial arts tropes. The plots don't make a lot of sense. But that usually means the plot is very simple, and it's just a very simple vehicle for action to take place in. In fact, that's a good thing to do with plots. If you're out there and you're making a movie and you want a bunch of stuff that happens and you're just looking for a reason for it all to happen, keep it simple. Don't make it a mess of various things going on at once, because your audience will not be able to follow it at all.
Yeah, what he said.
I don't know what else to say about this movie. It kind of reminded me of 80s comedies. I watched a bunch of those when I was a kid.
I think we all did.
But, like, it felt like another country watched, like, a bunch of 80s comedies and then tried to make their own. And just, something got lost in translation. And then it was dubbed for us to watch. I tried. I spent a good deal of time looking for a subtitled version of this movie.
Yep.
Can't seem to find one.
So whatever, if Matt isn't trolling us, I don't know where he found a version that was watchable. You hear that, Matt? What the heck, man?
At first I was laughing, but then it's like, well, the dub is ruining it, right?
Right.
And my level of irritation with the film just grew and grew and grew. I felt pain. I felt pain, Lucas, from watching this film.
I'm sorry, you felt pain, Dave?
I was just thinking of all the better things I could do with my time. I'll never get that 2 hours of my life back. It's just,
Arrgh.
At least I had you there to share it with.
So should we just break it down right now?
Break this down.
But first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I am as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
They're yelling in Baton Rouge.
God damn it.
Well, this is the part of the show we break the movie down and break it into 3 separate categories and rate them on a 1-star to 5-star basis.
Yep, and as you all know, those categories are plot, performances, and presentation. Lucas, we start off with the plot, which I have already just vented my grief on and explained to would-be filmmakers why they should not do what this film did. Do you have anything to add to the conversation?
Well, if you're going to dub your movie, make sure you have more than one person and try to match the level of enthusiasm and comedic timing as the original cast.
Also, if you're going to have a villainous character, introduce them not an hour into the film. Unless you have a very good reason for doing that.
Like sometimes you're like, oh man, this guy was actually the villain the whole time, but that's not what this was. It was just like...
True Detective. Did you watch True Detective?
No, I have not.
I will say no more. True Detective is legitimately one of my favorite things I've ever watched.
I've seen the first episode. I gotta watch the second one.
We said 1-star, yeah. Right? Okay.
I'm gonna have to take this abuse much longer.
Performances. I kind of have a no-comment policy with performances on this.
Yeah, because it's dubbed. We've had this problem over and over.
I gotta say this. They had Jackie Chan. What's Jackie Chan do? He does martial arts stuff. He can also do comedy really well. But when he combines those two elements, you get the best of Jackie Chan.
Yeah.
This film separated those elements and did service to neither. I know he wasn't a star when they made this film, but it just feels like you would have been able to see there's a talent here.
That's another thing, filmmakers. Recognize your film's talent.
And that doesn't mean that they have to be stars. You have to look
at that's not what I'm saying.
Your performers and see talent, see what their potential is, and play to their strengths.
That's what I'm saying.
Or cast other people who have the thing you want.
Yeah.
But there's no sense in going through that. It's just, like I said, it's pointless. There's no reason to watch this movie. And that's part of the reason why. Because it's just a waste of potential for any good thing to happen. So what are you calling it?
1-star?
1-star!
I'm gonna have to take this abuse much longer!
Presentation. I'm sorry I fell asleep. Lucas, are we reviewing a movie?
Yes.
Alright, where are we?
California.
Wow. I'm in a different time zone. You're still in New York?
Yep.
What time is it there?
9 a.m.
So what time is it in California?
It's midnight. No, I'm sorry. I thought I said 3 a.m. No, it's 6 a.m.
I do not know what just happened to your brain. This is what this movie does. It just... it makes you dumber for having seen it.
I mean, I gotta say, the prop of that van was cool.
Eh.
It kind of did some neat foldy-outy stuff. Boy, could it drive.
I don't know. It's like it wasn't poorly shot, but there was nothing exciting about it whatsoever. I mean, usually you watch a film and the cinematography, if it's done right, enhances some element of mood you're trying to establish.
Yeah.
And this just felt like there was no perspective whatsoever. They tried different camera angles, different lighting, but there was no sense of a purpose to it. And you could feel that lacking.
Bunch of lazy bums.
So think about what you're trying to say. Remember that. 2 stars.
2 stars.
You're going to need a bigger boat.
So, final thoughts?
This movie sucked. Don't watch it.
Yeah.
Please don't. Don't do it. Don't watch it.
This is kind of rare for our show, but this is our avoid at all costs. If a friend pranks you into getting to sit down and watch this movie, vengeance.
Only you are to blame.
I mean, before this, Matt recommended Snowpiercer. That turned out to be a really interesting ride and discussion for us. Then he was like, Anbach, guys, and we were like...
No, he said, what's the actor's name?
Oh, Tony
Yaw. Tony Yaw. Anything with Tony Yaw. And we're like, all right. So we played Anbach. And we're like, okay, that was good. And Ip Man supposedly is good. And we're seeing that next. But this, he faltered on this one, man.
Yeah. Now I can't trust him.
Are his opinions are forever tainted?
Yep. Tainted.
He kicked the taint of our show with a suggestion.
So, Lucas, let's just put this film out of our minds as much as humanly possible. The edit is the last time I want to ever think about this. I just want to remember all the good Jackie Chan movies that I grew up watching. But we watched something else that we would like to talk about, and we haven't spoken about it with each other.
The Black Angel.
The Black Angel. What's significant about this?
The Black Angel, Dave, was a short 20-minute film that preceded The Empire Strikes Back in Europe. And it was commissioned by George Lucas, who asked, art director?
Yeah, I believe it was his art director. He did the art direction for Empire.
Yeah, and he was like, go make a fantasy movie for me. I'll put it in front of Empire Strikes Back. This will be your first gig. And he's like, well, okay. And he set off with, like, you know, 4 actors and 2 horses and hopped off into the Scottish Highlands and shot this beautiful little cinematic thing, which was kind of lost to time until now. I think it got disappeared. There's no copies.
Yeah, they lost the negative.
Yeah, and then they found it in, like, as is the case with many lost films, they found a new negative sitting around in, like, a tin in, like, storage in some random studio somewhere.
Yeah. It's always weird how that happens. It's like when you go through your basement or something, you pull out all this old junk, like, say you're moving or something, and you're like, you find stuff, and it's like, oh my god, this thing, I haven't seen this in years. I wish it was something as cool as this once. I haven't found a short film yet. In fact, I'd be very suspect of any negative I found in my basement. It's like, do I want to know what this is?
Your dad has secretly been hiding the, like, the full cut of Metropolis that nobody's been able to find.
No, that would be cool. I was worried about something, like, gross or something. Because there have been stories about people finding stuff like that. So we watched this. They put this out online recently.
Yes.
I don't know what their future plans for it are, but they put it out online, which is where we saw it.
I think it's only up until the end of May for free.
Which is too bad. Our listeners will have a short time to see this before the end of May. Well, Lucas, just first off the bat, what was your general impression of this film?
In general, it was positive. I liked the scenery. It felt like it had some heart to it. And there were definitely some cool shots in there, especially like that one foggy shot of that weird corpse knight sitting on a horse with like the light spilling through behind him in the woods. That was really cool.
Well, as when you were describing this, you said this beautiful short film.
Yeah.
You specifically used that word, so... And I agree. I felt that the cinematography was so good, especially with the setting. Was it Scottish Highlands?
I know it was like in Scotland and Northern Scotland.
It's in Scotland. So
it's like, you know, and I see hills and mountains and stuff. So I'm like,
yeah, with that fog rolling down off the hills, which you can also see shot very well in Skyfall.
Okay. I'll watch it, Dave. I will.
Oh, man. The cinematographer who worked on that is working on the Blade Runner sequel.
Oh. Although I am a bit cautious.
I'm a bit cautious, too. And I listed another one of his credits that was a really good-looking film. And just beautiful cinematography. Oh, he's the guy who works with the Coen brothers, of course.
Okay, well, that's some good cred there.
And Skyfall was just one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. That movie just looks fantastic.
Okay, I'll take a look-see.
And if nothing else, this will stay true to... At least this is my hope, that this is a sign that this is going to stay true to the visual spectacle that Blade Runner is.
That's one of his highlights that it's most known for.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of interesting things about Blade Runner, but the visual styling is the best thing about it. I wouldn't put it on my list of favorite films ever, but I would definitely put it on my list of my favorite visual films.
I can see that. But anyway, back to
Black Angel.
Blah, blah, blah. So the story is of this knight who returns home from the Crusades and finds that his village has been devastated by a disease and his family is all gone. So he, you know, searches in the forest for them until he finds this mysterious maiden in a lake who asks him to kill this evil black knight that's...
Yeah, the narrative is very loose and it's very dreamlike. And I think it was helpful to prepare me that I listened to the guy talking about the movie first.
Okay.
And he said that he was inspired by dreamlike cinematography.
I can see that. Because there was like certainly some very dream sequences. I mean, there was kind of like a...
Well, I think everything after he falls in the water is a dream while he's drowning.
Okay.
That's my take.
How he ends up falling in the water was weird. Cause he just kind of walked in.
Well, it's like he walked up and then part of the bank collapsed and he fell in.
I guess. I didn't see the bank collapsing, but...
There are some things that are a bit iffy, like some line delivery that I think is really off.
The fight scene isn't exactly the...
No, the fight scene is pretty terrible.
It's like him just kind of slowly raising and lowering his axe against this staff.
The dreamlike cuts where it's like all of a sudden he doesn't know where the Black Angel is because he's moving around, right?
He'd like turn into confetti.
Also, the Black Angel... It seemed to me that the person portraying them was like a dancer or something. They had almost balletic movements, which it didn't fit for me. I think you wanted somebody who was very imposing there, and they got this very thin dancer type.
I think maybe what he was going for in that instance was maybe someone who looked like a thin corpse.
Right. But I would have substituted somebody who had... it could still go with thin... But somebody whose movements weren't so balletic. Maybe if you told the dancer, it's like, okay, how would a skeleton move? I don't know. Move like all your joints are rusty hinges or something. You know, not smooth move, but kind of like jerky motions, you know. Something different. Because it was just like, the second it looked good and it looked scary, and especially the way it was shot. And then it started to move, and, like, the illusion was killed for me, you know what I mean?
They don't list the Black Angel as a credit.
Doesn't surprise me. That's trying to support the myth of the character. They'll do that sometimes.
All right.
Like I've said, Boris Karloff was not originally credited as the monster in Frankenstein.
Interesting move. So we'll never know. All that reminds you, remember in, I remember watching the behind the scenes with you, but Army of Darkness, a lot of the skeletons were dancers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they're thin. Yeah.
So it's not it's a time-honored tradition, I guess.
But it worked in Army of Darkness for what Army of Darkness was and is.
A crazy, crazy film.
Maybe a little too crazy, I don't know. So yeah, my takeaway for Black Angel in the end is that... I think context is really important in appreciating this. If you saw this, like, oh, hey, watch this video online, and not knowing the context, by today's standards, this is pretty weak. But understanding the context of when it came out and how it came out, that's interesting.
Yeah, like that. If I had known the dream stuff, I think it would have helped my experience with, like, the fight more. because it was kind of like an odd representation, like, you know, him attacking this thing and then it, like, not really being there, but then it's there. Then, like, he'll have his axe, but then all of a sudden he won't have his axe. It's kind of like, oh, okay. I've had dreams like that.
Yeah, like I said, I think he fell in the water and he went into shock and he had this dream. And he's, you know, he came back home and his family had been dead of the plague. There's this, you know, girl he's trying to rescue from this figure of death. It's pretty obvious all the metaphors going on there. And it's like he's trying to combat death. And he loses, he dies.
Yeah, he was like, and, oh yeah, like,
the girl represents life.
Yeah, and take me instead of her. And then he like thwacks him on the side of the head and he's like falls down dead. And then it ends with back to him drowning.
Which, yeah, because the whole thing was a dream after he fell in the water. Which is like incident and something Creek Bridge or the Ambrose Bierce story set during the Civil War. This guy's being hanged and as the rope drops, he has this whole fantasy that the rope breaks and he falls into the water and he's able to escape and get back to his family. But in the story, it's like he's just about to reach his family. He's running towards his family and his head snaps back because it's the rope.
Ugh, gruesome.
Yeah, the guy wrote horror stories, Lucas.
So, I'd give this movie a 4 out of 5 overall.
Is for short films that I've seen?
Short films, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, there's some really, really good short films out there.
Yeah, I almost got to amend that to say genre short films.
You think maybe it should be like a 3 overall?
Yeah, yeah. I was going to go for 3.
Yeah.
But I was also thinking that this is a fantasy thing, and I don't know 1980 if there was no Lord of the Rings movie out then.
Yeah, like the only thing I can think of that really would, like something that feels kind of like this would be like Willow, and that's another George Lucas film.
Right. Was that post-1980?
Yeah. It's got to be post-Jedi, because he would have been too busy with Jedi to make that.
All right. Yeah.
I mean, I can check it, look it up, easy.
I mean, it has Warwick Davis in it.
Yeah. So it's got to be post-Jedi. Yeah, that makes sense. It would be after Jedi.
So I think this would have been a treat for people who are into fantasy, because I don't think they would have gotten to see much that was, like, well shot. And this also reminds me of, like, 60s and 70s comic books, like short story comics,
mm-hmm.
especially in the fantasy or horror genre. I've read a few that they're just, like, one-shot stories, and they have the sort of, you know, dream logic kind of thing going on. Like, comic books, genre comics have their own tropes and aesthetics, and it's more cerebral in comics. The science fiction, the fantasy, and the horror. Those tend to be, I don't want to say thoughtful or intelligent, but definitely cerebral. It's definitely like conceptual, and it's about, you know, the ideas and about the art. And I think that's sort of why it goes in that direction, because it's about the art, the visuals.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's almost like you're given a series of paintings and you're like, what's the narrative about this? There'd be some like dream logic to connect things. Like, this seemed very much about that image of the guy, the Black Angel, and the dressed in white young girl, and of course the location. It's literally like they looked at what they had and, you know, what they wanted, and they did what they could with that. So it's a fair effort. So yeah, I'd give this a 3 out of 5 overall.
Three.
Here's to swimming with bow-legged women.
It's preceded, like, if you start it and start watching it, you're going to see, like, a short interview with the director that goes
right.
on
it's
for, like,
worth watching.
Yeah,
that.
10 minutes.
No, it's like 3 minutes.
3 minutes? Okay. Well, okay, yeah, just don't think it's like you're clicking, like, oh, this is just a behind-the-scenes thing. No, that's just how it starts. Like,
okay, yeah.
You can skip if you want, but it's kind of fun to listen to him tell the story of how he got the job to do
and
that.
Like I said, you really do need that context to appreciate this, I feel. I'm not going to put a link into it, because the link isn't going to work in a week from when we post this episode. So there's no going to be no link.
Maybe just in case they don't do it. I don't know. It might still be there. Who knows?
I don't like having dead links if I can help it.
I guess you can put like a disclaimer, like if it still works.
So, Lucas?
Dave?
There's one other thing we both saw.
Yeah, and it was freaking awesome.
So good. We're not going to get into it because we could go on for a long time. And I'm guessing when we get together this weekend, we're going to talk about it a lot. But just briefly, Mad Max motherfucking Fury Road.
That was a really, really good film for something that was nothing but continuous action for 2 hours. Somehow he pulled it off.
And I feel the characters are interesting.
Yes, all of them.
And the world feels so real and rich. And it's so imaginative. You're like, well, it's a sequel, you know? Sequels have no imagination. Shut the fuck up. This, it may be a sequel to a franchise, but it is just buckets of things you've never seen before.
Yeah, like even though it takes place in the same universe. I mean, this I've read interviews where like Miller doesn't think there is any real continuity, that then maybe they're just kind of like legends. But even it takes place in the world, and there's some references to previous films and stuff, but everything in it is still new to itself compared to the other ones, mm-hmm. and completely reinvented, like this whole tribe of white-skinned people, like, who have control of the water. It's just, like, how that whole society works and everything. And then there's, like, two other ones and just a few other... it's, like... And they run across other tribes out there that you don't even really learn about, but, like, you see how they interact with them and their own vehicles, and you think, there's, like, something completely else going on. They're not even touching on.
This is the ultimate example of show, don't tell. The things that are cool in this movie are the same reasons that people obsess over side characters in Star Wars, like Boba Fett. You don't know much about him, but you just see him in action, and it's cool. And you wonder, it's like, what's that guy about?
And that's what a lot of this movie is.
But again, I really like the characters.
All good. Very good.
I mean, this isn't a drama. They're not like having some deep thing, but they were just good characters.
But but everything they did was fun. It was just everything was awesome. It was a great female protagonist.
I love how, you know, they did the artwork and then they, you know, storyboarded all their action scenes and then they built the story around that. And that did this thing where it integrated the dialogue into the action and the storytelling into the action. So it wasn't like a lot of action movies, I feel like, all right, we're doing a story piece now. And now we're doing an action scene that's just frivolous action, right? The integration of the action and story, of the dialogue into an exposition, into the action, it kept a tone and it maintained that tone from beginning to end. Even as different things were going on and they went different places.
Yeah, that is a good point.
Momentum. Momentum is the word I want to use.
Yeah, I never really thought about it that way. How a lot of action films, they use the story just to take a break from the action.
Right. This is no break. It's like the story is part of the action. It's integrated.
Great point.
And that feels so much more impactful that you're not just watching things blow up for the sake of it. I mean, you kind of are, let's face it, but you're watching it blow up in miraculous ways that they really did. And that's cool. The practical
every vehicle of this is amazing. That thing is just...
Watch some of the behind the scenes footage. It's just mind blowing.
I sent you that link, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Link that in the show notes or something for folks. Because that's just watching like 20 minutes of them do everything behind the scenes and you just feel like, wow, like everything is real. Like, say for like some of the big set pieces, like that giant dust storm.
Sandstorm.
The sandstorm.
Yeah.
Which was really beautiful scene.
Oh my God. This, again, so good to look at.
Yeah, like, yeah.
So rich.
I want to go back and watch that again.
This is like the reason to go to the theaters right now. All right, and if you haven't seen it, stop listening right now and go see it. I mean, stop listening to this podcast if you haven't seen that movie and go right now. Or at least skip the next few minutes because I want to do something. Favorite scene?
Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, the one right now that's sticking out to me was the whole scene in the dust storm. Mm-hmm. Just because of how visually crazy that was. And then just like everything happening. It was still, yeah.
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 That's definitely a highlight of the film. But for me personally, my favorite scene, the action actually happens off camera. That's when it's night and the only car still chasing them is a car that has a light on it.
Oh. Oh!
And they're trying to get out of the mud.
Yeah.
And they shoot the light out, but this guy's still coming and shooting at them as they're trying to get the big rig unstuck so they can keep going, keep running. And Max just grabs a bucket of gasoline and a knife and he says, I'll go deal with this. And he runs off into the night, the fog, and you can't see him anymore. The other characters get to work, you know, pouring water on the engine to cool it off and everything. And then you just see this light flash.
This huge explosion. Yeah,
this huge explosion through the fog in the night, which is beautiful.
Yeah, it looks great.
And after a moment, you just see him troop back in, you know, carrying a bunch of ammunition that he's stolen and covered in blood.
Yeah. Like, I saw that and I was like, oh, you know, it was great that they didn't even show that. Me come up with the story myself of as to how he managed with a tank of gasoline and a knife to to blow up this like tank tread car coming to.
And I think that works into the whole aspect of this feeling like a legend.
Yeah,
because it definitely, it's like that's one of those moments where you're like, this guy is badass. And he comes back, and he's covered in blood, and they're like, are you hurt? And she goes, it's not his blood. Yeah!
Oh, man, yeah, that was good. That was an interesting part of the film, with that landscape. Did you see those stilt-walking people?
Yes, and I immediately, it was silent in the theater, and I couldn't help myself. I just went, Dark Crystal? Because there are these creatures in the Dark Crystal called the Landwalkers, and they're just basically characters on those stilts.
Yeah.
With, like, puppet features
put
over them.
They're not, like, standing up in stilts. They have, like, stilts in all their limbs, and they're walking across this muddy landscape. And it's like, what? Who are these people, and how do they survive in the land here?
There are so many little moments of things that just capture your imagination, and you're like, what's going on there?
Yeah, it's like films like these that get me excited to do my own thing. I mean, like, you know, really good made dramas and stuff are fine. I mean, like, yeah, that was a good movie. I enjoyed that. But it's like stuff like this.
That becomes your legends, you know? I mean, I don't know. There's something about a drama, like, that sometimes I'll watch a drama and I can recognize how good it is, but it feels really impersonal.
Yeah.
Whereas I watch a film that really excites me, I really connect to it. And I feel a connection to that world and those characters.
That's why I fell in love with Star Wars. It's man.
And it feels personal. And just the richness of imagination, especially, you know, I've always been introverted, live in my head, and, you know, especially when I was a kid, I had, like, fantasies all the time, you know? It's just like, this kind of stuff is, like, what I feel more connected to rather than watching a realistic human drama.
Yeah.
That just feels like life to me, and I can appreciate that. I can go, I've seen people like this, but it's like, films like Mad Max or Star Wars are what get in my head and take me somewhere.
Yeah.
That feels like it's larger than life.
Really stimulates
it's life plus.
Now, I haven't seen Road Warrior yet. Mm. So now I want to see that film.
Oh, yeah. I love Road Warrior. Thunderdome is an insanely quotable film that's a really bad film.
I've seen chunks of that film.
It's like, there's stuff you will take away from that you will reference your entire life, but it's not a good movie.
Gotta see Road Warrior. I've seen Mad Max.
The Road Warrior is great. You have to see it.
Yeah, I'll check that out. Oh, and there's no, I was just watching a video. I want to finish it because I didn't finish it because I was watching it on my phone at the time and the audio got desynced, but it was like a little short documentary someone put together about the influences of Mad Max on the Fallout game series.
Hmm.
Which is a lot of fun. There was like even you've probably come across it already in Fallout 1 or 2. You come to like this place and there's a dog and there's a guy. There's like there's this dude who came by and he's basically describes like a Mad Max to a T. Even the accent.
Yeah, I had that.
Yeah,
happen.
The accent and stuff. And it's like and this is his jacket. And it's like you put the jacket on, the dog starts following you. It's the dog from the movie.
Yeah, I did that in the game. Also, you have to say, it's like, the entire world of Fallout is influenced by the Road Warrior.
I hope Fallout 4 gets influenced by Fury Road.
Maybe. Of course, it's one of those things, it's like,
That's probably been in development for a long time.
But I hope maybe the developers come back from seeing that movie and are like, we got to change some things. We got to add this in.
Well, there is a Mad Max video game.
Is there? Is it a driving thing?
Did you not watch the trailer? I told you about it.
I don't know.
Lucas, it's basically Grand Theft Auto in the Mad Max world.
What? I want to play that.
Yeah. Right now. It's an open world game.
Oh, man. I got to check that out.
I watched the trailer and it's like, this is a lot of what I want to see in Fallout 4. But it also kind of feels like Red Dead Redemption, which is, in my opinion, the best game I've ever played.
All right, cool. Sounds like a good combo.
But instead of getting on a horse, you get into battle vehicles. Like, out of twisted metal. So, in conclusion, Lucas, we gotta come back next week and talk about another movie.
And that movie is Ip Man.
Yes, get back to the martial artsness that this month is supposed to be about, which this movie, this freaking Jackie Chan movie, this Wheels on Meals movie, did not fulfill at all.
Did not. All right. Ip Man, a semi-biographical account of Ip Man, the first martial arts master to teach the Chinese martial art of Wing Chun. It was made in 2008, starring Donnie Yen as the Ip Man, Simon Yam, Ka Tung Lam, a whole bunch of other people.
Your pronunciation will be forgiven.
Directed by Wilson Yip, written by Edmund Wong, Chen Tai Li.
Okay, wrap it up.
Well, Lucas, I'm definitely looking forward to a good martial arts movie. I've heard a lot about this one. It was made in the last 10 years.
It was.
And they also made two sequels. Or a sequel and a prequel. So that all works out. Whatever.
Well, Jelly Folk, thanks for listening to this episode of No U-Turns at the Drive-In. We've been your host, Lucas Wilson.
And David Halstead. Sorry we didn't have a better movie, but we talked about some other cool stuff.
If you enjoyed what you listened to, may I suggest you go to our website at psychojellyfish.com to find this and other podcasts. You can also subscribe to us on iTunes and the podcast app Stitcher. Please rate and review. It really does help on the show.
It helps!
If you're a fan, you want to help spread the madness, give us a like at facebook.com/psychojellyfish or follow us on Twitter @jellycast. If you have thoughts, words, comments, or questions, or maybe a movie you think we should watch, send it away at email@psychojellyfish.com.
Or leave it in the comment section.
Good night, gentle listeners.
Keep it psycho. I haven't been at Kevin's house in a long time. Except for butter.
Your video. Yes. Which we linked in the last episode. Hope you caught that.
Yeah. You'll do it again.
Sure I will. I'm not gonna, edit this conversation out or anything. This is vital.